Innovation Rockstars. Innovation Rockstars.
Today, we are joined by Noelia Almanza Ahari.
Hi, and welcome back to the Innovation Rockstar Show. My name is Chris Mühlroth, and in this episode, I am pleased to welcome Noelia Almanza. Noelia has 20 years of experience in innovation, leadership, and complex endeavors across several countries, as well as experience in engaging and advising C-level executives across various industries. And her personal code of conduct is actually made up of two concepts. Number one, say, do, and act. And number two, people, profit, value. So that's great. And Noelia, thank you so much for joining us to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's really a pleasure being here talking to you. Finally, I would say.
Finally. All right. So let's start with a 60 seconds introduction sprint about you, your career, and your experiences. So for the next 60 seconds, the stage is all yours. Let's go.
Ooh, 60 seconds. Yeah. So I have been in innovation since 2001, which is now 20 years. I have been working internationally, and I've been managing all from small products to large corporate C-level innovation departments in multinational companies, mainly in healthcare and health tech, and in the blue light and civil defense industry, which was very fun. I've also been a people manager, and I like to describe myself as having two legs. One is managing people, and the other one is managing organizations and parts of organizations. Oftentimes, leadership comes hand in hand with making organizations thrive, I would say, and kind of grow. And I always put the people first, as you can see from my code of conduct. At the moment, I have taken a short break from innovation due to innovation fatigue. And this comes from being in innovation theater. So I was kind of offered a six-month assignment, which I took on in the gaming industry. And that was really something scary, but I put my money where my mouth was, and I stepped out of my comfort zone and went into something that I really didn't know about.
All right, thanks much. So next up, I will now give you three sentence starters to complete. And let's see what your reply is. So the first one goes like this. The best thing about working in innovation is...
the possibility to have an impact on the business of a company and to drive the change in our society, I would say.
All about impact and driving change. Perfect. Number two, one thing nobody knows about me is...
that I, as a kid, was stolen from my mother in Colombia, Bogota, and kidnapped, sold. And that is actually how I ended up in Sweden in the 80s.
That is an impressive story. And finally, number three, the worst thing about working in innovation is...
innovation theater and innovation fatigue, which you can sort of die from as an innovation manager.
Yeah, and this will certainly be, you know, the focus topic, the core topic of today. So, Noelia, as we've learned, you've already gone through many career stages as maybe head of innovation or comparable roles. So, first became aware of you through an article in the online magazine media site called Sifted, which I guess is backed by the Financial Times. So the article features your story, which mainly revolves around what you have just mentioned, innovation theater, innovation fatigue. And for those who are not too familiar with this term or with these two terms, can you please explain what innovation theater actually is?
I would say that innovation theater can be seen as a collection of concepts, to be fair. And innovation theater can range from, you know, companies that only use innovation as a selling point to large corporations that call regular and linear product development as innovation. And also when you can see different companies, I would say, directing their efforts of innovation, setting a structure or something like that, which has no whatsoever output from all of the initiatives driven within the company. And it can also be companies who might hire a chief of innovation or a chief innovation officer to drive all of the innovation efforts. But, you know, they are restrained by money. There is no money put into the organization, and that leads up to the fact that you don't get anything out from any of the efforts that you do, and you know, also to see that, you know, the output will be no gain for the users or the customers either. So I would say, to scope it together, I would say it is a collection of concepts, and it can be kind of very different from organization to organization as well.
Would you maybe argue that there is somewhat a parallel to the term greenwashing that we see these days? I mean, that's also, you know, putting a green cover on some activities. Would you maybe argue that the innovation theater could be compared to that, or do you see that differently?
In some ways, I can say that, you know, if you're using the word innovation in like a selling point, I would say that, you know, that's when we come close to being the same thing as greenwashing. But I don't think that, you know, you can actually harm people and organizations as you would do by greenwashing when you state that you're doing something that you're really not doing or just trying to put up a facade around it. So more or less the same, but, you know, but different.
Interesting perspective. Thanks. So in a somewhat metaphorical sense about the innovation theater, if we would actually imagine it to be a theater and a stage, so who is there on and behind the stage, and in which, you know, acts does the theater actually take place?
Yeah, I would, you know, if we're going to go metaphorical here, so I would say that, you know, as on a stage and behind the scene of a theater, you have the professionals actually running the lights and running the sound and all of these things. And I would say that the people and professionals on the stage here are the innovation managers, innovation leaders, and the people driving the actual initiatives in the company who are actually appointed to do something. But, you know, you don't have your spotlight there. You can't have the people running the sound. They don't make you heard, or you have the people selling the tickets, not selling the tickets and giving you the audience or whatever it can be about. So it's very much, it's a good metaphor, I would say, when it comes to this. And when you have these kinds of people in the behind, not doing their job, it's becoming very, very easily that you, as the innovation manager or the actor on stage, become also the person that is going to be hit by all the tomatoes thrown by the audience, if you will have any kind of audience. So I would say that that would pretty much express or explain my take on this one, I say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the question of the why is probably hard to explain, right? But maybe we can, you know, talk about some of the aspects to it. So why do you think companies actually fail to execute innovation projects and innovation initiatives, innovation programs that they originally set out to do, or at least that they said that they want to set out to do them? But what do you think? What's the why behind the innovation theater?
Well, I would say that there can be so many different reasons, and I think it's hard to just point out one, because I think it can be a series of hitches, hazards, or even restraints, as well as it can be the prestigefulness from your key stakeholders or the C-suite or any other person within the company that creates some sort of an obstacle or a road bump to where you want to go, and that can be very, very dangerous for the organization to actually being able in executing innovation projects. And even though if you have, you know, all the buy-ins from your owners for the organization or anything like that, you can actually have the persons within the organization trying to shoot you down in whatever you can do. So that's actually one take that I have actually lived through to see the prestigefulness playing out that way.
And can you maybe tell us a story of, you know, maybe one concrete example where the innovation theater was actually highly present and dominant?
This one that I need to think about.
Sure.
It's a hard one, but I would say that when working in an organization where you have this linear product development thing that I was talking about earlier on, but you state that you're super innovative and you're trying to get into the future by just, you know, changing small bits of the product and not even being incremental about it, that's how you That's a good example of it. And I can't mention any specific company, but you know, I had one AI solution going on very well for a company, which could really be almost, I would say, disruptive, because when I have been working in intensive care units back in the early 2010, we were always looking into ways in measuring the blood glucose levels in the blood of the patient without pinching the patient or making a hole into this patient's skin. So this is an AI solution which can actually measure your blood glucose levels by only using the camera or your smartphone or something like that. And, you know, as a company, when you set out to be very innovative and you use the word innovation, like, you know, your unique selling point, but you don't even want to look into something like this, which is sort of the holy grail to whatever you want to do. And you know, it's just in front of you. And you don't do it, and then you say, "We are super innovative. We have, a software solution for doing some things that has been around for 2,000 years, maybe."
So that's interesting, I'm certainly, you know, drawing your experience from real life. Why don't actually more people with the similar experiences as you, you know, publicly speak about all this, the innovation theater? What do you think?
Well, if I go to myself, I mean, I've been in innovation for the past 20 years, and I think that the sense of your own failure when you can't actually drive an initiative through or implement an innovation strategy within a company, or when you get kicked out, or if you're you know, failing, I think the sense of the failure itself can be very, very hindering to you getting out there to speak publicly about, you know, where the blame actually belongs, because you don't want to be seen either as somebody who pushes the reasons to somebody else. You know, it was this person's fault, or that the right circumstances wasn't really existing in the company. And the also one other thing that I have heard since this article came out and was published, and I have been contacted from several different parts of the world. The one thing that many of the people are talking about is actually the fear of losing their careers or even get blacklisted as innovation professionals. I have always been very secure in myself, and I felt the need for, you know, just raising the word about it, that this is something that's actually being the truth for all innovation managers. And I think by sharing these kinds of experiences, I think that we can together make it so much better too for all of us in the industry.
And maybe one additional aspect to it, not sure if you can relate to that, but I would be interested in your opinion on this. You know, this also, and also the contents of your article, sounds as if you know, there was, or as if there still is, a misunderstanding of what an innovation manager or a head of innovation or a chief of innovation officer actually does. So in your opinion, you know, can you relate to that? Can you speak a bit to your perspective on what the job to be done actually is in such a role?
I can very much relate to that. And the people who listens to this episode will also recognize what I stated in the article, that when I was hired for one of these positions, one of the largest things that I identified as a discrepancy on what I had in mind, you know, my job were to be, and their vision of what I was going to be doing. Like, you know, when I presented to them the strategy and the strategic planning for the coming 3 years, they were like, you know, but we hired you because we thought you were going to be the very creative person and, you know, coming up with all the good ideas, sort of that, you know, if I would have had a hotline to Silicon Valley, maybe. Even so, and I think that what I see as the job to be done is, you know, putting some structure to the organization and setting a direction, and also to be executing and facilitating for innovation to happen. And by doing that, you know, you have to use some structures and, you know, processes around it as well. But the most important thing is to never forget about the people within the organization who have been around for such a long time and knows sort of what the end users, the customers, and need and the value we need to create for this, and bring those aspects into whatever we want to do when we're trying to find the new ways into the future for the business side. But that's in this particular place, that was not really thought about, you know, just throwing away all the competence, I would say.
So I think the importance of that statement should not be underestimated, right? So the innovation manager, as it says, the head of innovation, the CIO, chief innovation officer, chief digitization officer, whatever, however you call it, does not necessarily have to be the creative girl or the creative guy, right? It's about managing, it's about facilitating, it's about connecting the dots, it's about getting the right capabilities, competencies, frameworks, processes, governance, whatever in place, but not actually coming up with the next best idea or, you know, with the next best disruption. That's not the job to be done. I think that's can I summarize it like this?
Yeah, and that's a really good summarization. Yeah. Very good. I couldn't have said it better myself.
So, Noelia, what does that do to a company, to its innovation culture, to the mindsets? I mean, it sounds, you know, dramatic and drastic that if you continue to, innovation theater your way through the company, how does it change the culture mindset, on the long run?
Yeah. I think it's very, very dangerous for a company not taking all of these aspects into account when you're trying to plan for your future. And one of the core things to stay relevant on the market is actually to weigh in, you know, all of the competences that you have within the company. And, you know, because all of the people in the company will also have an idea on how is, you know, what's the best way forward and what's the best way in doing things. And there are two sides to the innovation theater and the hazards for engaging in innovation theater. One is from the manager side, I would say that, you know, as from my point of view, when I was appointed to be the head of innovation and I was, you know, suffering from this kind of theater, I suffered very hardly from a fatigue from, you know, not being able to do what I set out to do and what I wanted to do. And, you know, I always have the passion and the best for the company in my views when I do something. And the other side of the coin here is that if you have people within the organization always trying to do things better, but they never get heard or they never are taken seriously in the kind of efforts that they want to drive, you know, that's going to end up in, you know, losing the people to other companies. And how are you going to drive your organization with other people? I see that as one of the largest risks that you're running, except for, you know, the fact that, you know, the products that you're doing and everything that you're basically doing within the company becomes irrelevant for the market in the long run.
So it's a clearly jeopardizing the future readiness, especially on the long run, for companies. That's important to state. So what is the cure for that, for the innovation theater? How can, you know, someone or some organization not only talk the talk, but actually walk the talk?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different aspects to take into consideration here. You can look into the organizational configuration or the setup of the organization to actually facilitate for innovation and innovation efforts to actually take place. And one of the things that I have been diving very deeply into throughout my past 3 years or something like that is the organizational setup where you have an ambidextrousness to the organization, where you detach the explorative things that you do within an organization and put it aside and continue in doing all of the exploitative activities, you know, as the core business. But the important thing is here that you need to have something in between there to scale up or scale in or modify whatever you can come up with in this exploration unit, so it can fit into the overall core business and take you on the journey into the future. But this is something that I rarely see, and there you have this kind of twitch to it, that you have entrepreneurs within a company coming up with good ideas, and then you have a spin-off effect. They create their own small companies, and the larger mother company invests in this company, and that's a metaverse and a version of what I just said. And then, but to be able to do this, I also think it's very important that you know that you will have to put the money into this kind of organization as well. But they need to own the budget within itself to actually be able to carry out what they want to do and what they believe in. And that's, you know, the best side of it. But if you are integrating all of these parts within an existing organization, I think it's really important that you maybe even will have to goal set the failure rate of all of the projects that you want to be driving within the organization, so that when you look back, you can't be, you know, punished for having wasted this amount of money on just failures, because failures should be a learning. They should be a blessing to the company, and you should have put your money there to learn the lesson.
So, okay, now we can definitely state, and also with that context, you know, that the destructive power the innovation theater may unfold can be disastrous, especially on the longer term. So I would like to turn to a few more, you know, positive examples, if there is, and maybe specialize a bit in the health or health tech sector. So, you know, of course, this industry and this sector is highly regulated due to, you know, perfectly valid reasons. So if you turn that now upside down, not talking about the innovation theater, but actually thinking of innovation success and innovation facilitation, how could one, for example, continuously facilitate innovation in such an industry like health tech, or the healthcare, the public healthcare sector, even as it's such highly regulated?
I would say that, you know, since it's such a regulated industry, you need to keep on taking these baby steps and keep on moving forward by nudging the lawfulness of the entire scope in which you are actually operating. And I think that we have seen this being pushed by external factors. We have the pandemic going on, and that has been a pusher to make innovation happen. And I think that these baby steps actually consists of taking the very, very, very lowest hanging fruits, like looking into remote patient monitoring and things like those, which is not very innovative, but the value they create by, you know, enabling a patient to stay home and being remotely monitored is actually very innovative in such a way that you have this value stream that is being created, and you are using video streaming and sound streaming in a completely different way than it was thought for from the beginning. And then we have the 5G coming in here and play a big role in the IoT society too. So, yeah.
And what are some of the, you know, special rules or the you know, specialties that you actually need to take into account in this industry? Can you just give some examples?
Of course. I mean, we have the internet security, the cyber security that we always need to take into consideration. Can we have someone, you know, bugging the system or something like that? But then we have also the GDPR, the HIPAA, the MDR, the software as a medical device regulations. So I think that we need to have these kind of rules and regulations always on top of mind to stay compliant to what you need to be doing. Because if you don't stay compliant to these rules and regulations, I think that you will put a lot of money into something which is taking the entirely wrong direction, or you are developing some things that's not going to be working. And I have actually seen this very, very often when companies are trying to get into the healthcare industry, but coming from maybe retail or something like that. When you try to take something that's very well working within the retail industry, but and then you try to apply it to the healthcare industry, but you don't take this into consideration, and that can actually cause you to be sued or anything like that, which will cost you a lot of money just by simple mistakes and not being, you know, having informed yourself of what's the most important regulatory obstacles here, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. And you've just stated it a couple of minutes before, you know, that we recently have witnessed many changes and also innovations in the shadow of the, you know, recent pandemic. So again, you know, what does this, you know, these changes, the speed of change, the acceleration, what does that actually do to the perception of innovation processes in the healthcare sector? Do you think that on the medium to long-term horizon, they will actually, you know, speed up, they will maybe shorten innovation cycles, maybe stay as they are with the current pandemic? Or do you think this is actually a change and an acceleration which will not be lasting for longer?
Well, as so many other questions and answers here during our episode, I would say that there are so many different aspects of this. And I think one of the reasons to why things has been so slow in the past, I think it's because of the healthcare industry has been so regulated and everything needs to be so controlled. There should be studies, you know, carried out for whatever things you will want to be doing since you have you're engaging with medicine and all of these kinds of things. What I can see that has happened here in terms of being suffering from this pandemic is that we have seen a vast exposure of the parts of the healthcare system which are not very functioning, I would put it, because and that has been actually driven the all over innovation efforts. Because, you know, it might not seem as innovation to an out bystander, maybe. But for us in the industry and the healthcare sector, we can see that, you know, we're taking in some things that are being used in some other industries and taking them in and translating them into our needs and the needs of the patients. And then being able to create this value for all the persons involved. And we have seen during the pandemic also a very high gain within the socio-economical aspects of it, and, you know, freeing up time from doctors and looking into how we can use AI to free up even more time and resources from within the healthcare systems across the world, I would say.
So highly interesting. Thank you for these insights. So Noelia, with all of these experiences you've had so far in those various innovation roles, if there can be even one, what is your, you know, one last message to the corporate world that you really want to get across?
I would say that the corporate world should shake their own egos off and try to stay on top of things and wanting to try new things and step out of the comfort zone. I would say that that's a cliche, but it's very, very true. And I think that just being brave and courageous about new things is going to bring you far into the future.
It is a great statement. And finally, Noelia, when you look back on your professional career so far, and this is our signature question, our recurring question, right? So what would you say was your greatest innovation rock star moment to date?
I would say that my greatest innovation rockstar moment was when I, as a 16-year-old back in 2001, started an organization in Bolivia trying to have an impact on the healthcare system in Cochabamba, and created this organization called Movimiento Sonrisa, which is up to this day an existing organization working to take care of the most poor people in Cochabamba, where we created everything from a pharmacy to a doctor's clinic to a patient hospital or a patient hotel where the parents to the kids can stay for free. And, you know, being able to have this impact on the overall healthcare system in Cochabamba, that was the coolest thing that I've ever seen. I was working with this for 10 years and not ever once we used the word innovation or social innovation. But looking back onto it, it for sure was innovation.
It for sure was innovation. So, okay, today we have covered the innovation theater on the one hand and the highly impactful innovation rockstar moment on the other hand. So I think we have covered quite a lot. And with that, we also have reached the end of this episode. So Noelia, thank you for the honest words, the insights from your decades of experience in the areas of innovation. It was a pleasure to listen to you.
Thank you so much. And it was a pleasure to finally meet with you and finally be able to do this rockstar moment of my life. This is the new one.
Great. And to everybody listening or watching, if you want to learn more about the Innovation Theater, Innovation Fatigue, or the highly special Innovation Rockstar moment we just learned of, simply leave us a comment on this episode or just drop us an email at info@innovationrockstars.show. Now that's it. Thanks for listening. See you in the next episode. Take care and bye bye.
Innovation Rockstars.
That was Nawilia Almanza-Ahari
discussing how to guard against the innovation theater, how to manage failure within innovation projects, as well as the critical role that innovation managers play in connecting departments to drive new, potentially disruptive initiatives. If you'd simply like to give us feedback on this episode or suggest someone that you think would be a great innovation rockstar, feel free to email us at info@innovationrockstars.show. For more inspiring innovation stories, visit our website at www.innovationrockstars.show or browse through our Innovation Rockstars channel on all major podcast platforms.